Chapter 13. I have to apologize for the introduction to that last chapter. It was far too apologetic. There's been too much apologizing going on in this book. I'm sorry. I want to prove to you that I'm a liar, not a wimp. The thing is, you never know who is going to be reading your books. I've tried to write this one for members of both the Hushlands and the Free Kingdoms, and that's tough enough. However, even within the Hushlands, the variety of people who could pick this book up is incredible. You could be a young boy wanting to read an adventure story. You could be a young girl wanting to investigate the truth of the librarian conspiracy. You might be a mother reading this book because you've heard that so many of your kids are reading it. Or you could be a serial killer who specializes in reading books, then seeking out the authors and murdering them in horrible ways. If you happen to fall into that last category, you should know that my name isn't really Alcatraz Smedri. Nor is it Brandon Sanderson. My name is really Garth Nix, and you can find me in Australia. Oh, and I insulted your mother once. What are you going to do about it, huh? Anyway, it's very difficult to relate this story to everyone who might be reading my book, so I've decided not to try. Instead, I'll just say something that makes no sense to anyone. Flagwat the Happy Bean Sprout. Confusion, after all, is the true universal language. The feeling is coming from that direction, I said, pointing. Unfortunately, that direction happened to be straight through a wall full of books. So, one of the books is an oculator? Kaz asked. I rolled my eyes. He chuckled. I understood what you meant. Stop acting like Bastille. Obviously, we have to find a way around. There must be another hallway on the other side. I nodded, but the lens felt close. We'd walked down a few rows already, coming to this point, and I felt like it was just on the other side of the wall. I took off my discerner's lenses, putting on my oculator's lenses instead. One of their main functions was to reveal oculatory power, and they made the entire wall glow with a bright white light. I stumbled back, shocked by the powerful illumination. Glowing, eh? Bastille asked, walking up to me. I nodded. That's strange, she said. It takes time for an area to charge with oculatory power. The lens you sensed must have been here for a while if it has started making things around it glow. What are you implying? I asked. She shook her head. I'm not sure. When you first spoke, I assumed we were close to Grandpa Smedri since he's the only other oculator we know to be down here, except for, well, your father. And he... I didn't want to think about that. It's probably not Grandpa. He came down here only a little while before we did. What then? Bastille asked. I took off my oculator's lenses, then put on my discerner's lenses again. I walked carefully along the wall full of books, inspecting the brickwork. I didn't have to look far before I discovered that one section of the wall was much older than all of the others. Something is back there, I said. I think there might be a secret passage or something. How do we trigger it? Bastille asked. Pull one of the books? I guess. One of the ever-present curators floated closer. Yes, it said. Pull one of the books. Take it. I paused, hand halfway up to the shelf. I'm not going to take it. I'll just shake it a bit. Try it, the curator whispered. Whether you pick up a book or whether it falls off accidentally, it does not matter. Move even one of the books a few inches off its shelf, and your soul is ours. I lowered my hand. The curator seemed too eager to scare me away from trying to move one of the books. It seems like they don't want me to find out what is behind there. I inspected the bookshelf. There was enough space to the side of it, between it and the next bookshelf over, that I could reach through and touch the back wall. I took a deep breath, leaning up against the bookcase, careful to keep from touching any of the books. Alcatraz, Bastille said with concern. I nodded, careful, as I pressed my hand against the back wall. If I break this and the bookshelf falls over, it will cost me my soul. My discerner's lenses told me that this portion of the brick wall behind the bookshelf was older than even the rest of the walls and floor. Whatever was behind that wall had been there even before the curators moved into the area. I released my power. The wall crumbled, bricks breaking free of their mortar. I anxiously tried to hold the bookcase steady as the wall collapsed behind it. Kaz rushed forward, grabbing it on the other side, and Bastille pressed her hand against the books that were teetering slightly on their shelves. Apparently, none of this was enough to give the curators leave to take our souls, because they watched with an air of petulance as not a single book slid out. I wiped my brow. The entire wall had fallen away, and there was some kind of room back there. That was rash, Alcatraz, Bastille said, folding her arms.
He's a true Smedri, Kaz said, laughing.
I glanced at the two of them, suddenly embarrassed. Someone had to break down that wall. It's the only way we were going to get through. Bastille shrugged. You complain about having to make decisions, then you make one like that without even asking. Do you want to be in charge or not? Brilliant, she said, peeking into the hole between the bookcases. Very inspiring. Kaz, you think we can get through? Kaz was prying a lamp off the wall.
Sure we can, though we may have to move that bookcase.
Bastille eyed it, and then, sighing, helped me ease the bookcase back from the wall just a few inches. We didn't, fortunately, lose any books, or any souls in the process. Once finished, Kaz was able to slip through the opening.
Wow, he said.
Bastille, standing on that side of the bookcase, went next. I, therefore, had to go last, which I found rather unfair, considering that I'd been the one to discover the place. However, all feelings of annoyance vanished as I stepped into the chamber. It was a tomb. I'd seen enough movies about wisecracking archaeologists to know what an Egyptian pharaoh's tomb looked like. A massive sarcophagus sat in the center, and there were delicate, golden pillars spaced around it. Mounds of wealth were heaped in the corners, coins, lamps, statues of animals. The floor itself seemed to be of pure gold. So, I did what anyone would do if he discovered an ancient Egyptian tomb. I yelped for joy, then rushed directly over to the nearest pile of gold and reached for a handful.
Alcatraz, wait! Bastille said, grabbing my arm with a burst of Kristen speed.
What? I asked in annoyance. You're not going to give me some kind of nonsense about grave robbing or curses, are you?
Shattering glass, no, Bastille said. But look, those coins have words on them.
I glanced to the side and noticed that she was right. Each coin was stamped with a foreign kind of character that wasn't Egyptian, as far as I could tell.
So, I asked, what does it matter if...
I trailed off, then glanced at the three curators who floated in through the wall in a fittingly ghostly manner.
Curators, I said. Do these coins count as books?
They are written, one said. Paper, cloth, or metal, it matters not.
You can check one out if you wish, another whispered, floating up to me.
I shivered, then glanced at Bastille.
You just saved my life, I said, feeling numb.
She shrugged. I'm a Christian. That's what we do. However, she did seem to walk a little bit more confidently as she joined Kaz, who was inspecting the sarcophagus.
You should have realized that I wouldn't be able to have any of the coins.
That's what happens in stories like this. Characters in books find heaps of gold or hidden treasure all over the place, but then, of course, they never get to spend a penny of it. Instead, they either, one, lose it in an earthquake or a natural disaster, two, put it in a backpack that then breaks at a climactic moment, dropping all of the treasure as the heroes flee, C, use it to rescue their orphanage from foreclosure.
Stupid orphanages. Anyway, it is very common for authors to do things like this to the people in their stories. Why? Well, we will claim it's because we want to teach the reader that the real wealth is friendship or caring or something stupid like that. In reality, we're just mean people. We like to torment our readers, and that translates to tormenting our characters. After all, there is only one thing more frustrating than finding a pile of gold, than having it snatched away from you. And that's being told that at least you learned something from the experience. I sighed, leaving the coins behind.
"Oh, don't mope, Alcatraz," Bastille said, waving indifferently toward another corner of the room.
"Just take some of those gold bars instead. They don't seem to have anything written on them." I turned and smacked my forehead, suddenly realizing that I wasn't in a fictional story. This was an autobiography and was completely real, which meant that the lesson I could learn from it all is that grave robbing is way cool.
"Good idea," I said.
"Curators, do those bars count as books?" The ghosts floated sullenly, one shooting an angry glare at Bastille.
"No,"
it finally said. I smiled, then proceeded to stuff a few bars in my pocket, then a few more in Bastille's pack. In case you were wondering, yes, gold really is as heavy as they say.
And it's totally worth carrying anyway.
"Don't you guys want any of this?" I asked, putting another bar in my jacket pocket. Kaz shrugged.
"You and I are Smedries, Alcatraz. We're friends to kings, counselors to emperors, defenders of the free kingdoms. Our family is incredibly wealthy, and we can pretty much have anything we want. I mean, that cinematic dragon we crashed was probably worth more money than most people would ever be able to spend in a lifetime."
"Oh," I said. "And I kind of took a vow of poverty," Bastille said, grimacing.
"That was new."
"Really?" She nodded. "If I brought some of that gold, it would just end up going to the Knights of Crystallia, and I'm a little annoyed with them right now." I stuffed a few bars in my pocket for her anyway.
"Alcatraz, come look at this," Kaz said.
I reluctantly left the rest of the gold behind, clinking my way over to the other two. They stood a distance away from the sarcophagus, not approaching. "What's wrong?"
"Look closely," Kaz said, pointing.
I did, squinting in the light of the single lamp. With effort, I saw what he was talking about.
Dust, hanging in the air, motionless.
"What's that?" I asked.
"I don't know," Kaz said, "but if you look, there's a bubble of clean ground around the sarcophagus. No dust."
There was a large circle on the ground, running around the casket, where either the dust had been cleaned away, or it had never fallen. Now that I thought to notice, I realized that the rest of this room was far more dusty than the library. It hadn't been disturbed in some time.
"There's something odd about this place," Bastille said, hands on hips.
"Yeah," I said, frowning. "Those hieroglyphics don't quite look like any I've seen before."
"Seen a lot?"
she asked, raising a skeptical eyebrow. I flushed. "I mean, they don't look the way Egyptian ones should." It was hard to explain. As one might expect, the walls were covered with small pictures, drawn as if to be words. Yet instead of people with cattle or eagle heads, there were pictures of dragons and serpents. Instead of scarabs, there were odd geometric shapes, like runes. Above the doorway, where we had come in, there was...
"Kaz," I said, pointing.
He turned, then his eyes opened wide. There, inscribed over the door, was a circle split into four sections, with symbols written in each of the four pieces. Just like the diagram Kaz had drawn for me on the ground, the one about the different kinds of talents. The incarnate wheel. This one also had a small circle in the center with its own symbol, along with a ring around the outside, split into two sections, each with another character in them.
"It could just be a coincidence,"
Kaz said slowly. I mean, it's just a circle split into four pieces. It isn't necessarily the same diagram.
It is, I said. It feels right.
Well, maybe the curators put it there, Kaz said. They saw me draw it on the ground and copied it down. Maybe they have placed it here for us to find so it would confuse us.
I shook my head. I've still got my discerner's lenses on. That inscription is as old as the rest of the tomb.
What does it say? Bastille asked. Won't that tell us what it is?
Why didn't I think of that? I thought, embarrassed again.
Bastille certainly was quick on her feet. Or maybe I was slow.
Let's not discuss that possibility any further.
Forget I mentioned it.
Can I read that text without losing my soul? I asked.
We looked at the curators. One reluctantly spoke.
You can, it said. You lose your soul when you check out or move a book. A symbol on the wall can be read without being checked out.
It made sense. If it were that easy to get souls, the curators could just have posted signs, then taken the souls of any who read them. With that, I pulled off my discerner's lenses and put on my translator's lenses. They immediately interpreted the strange symbols. The inner squares say the things you taught, Kaz, I said. Time, space, matter, knowledge. Kaz whistled.
Walnuts. That means whoever built this place knew an awful lot about Smedri talents and arcane theory. What about that symbol in the middle of the circle? What does it say?
It says breaking, I said quietly.
My talent.
Interesting, Kaz said. They give it its own circle on the diagram. What is that outer circle?
The ring was split into two pieces. One says identity, I said. The other says possibility.
Kaz looked thoughtful.
Classical philosophy, he said. Metaphysics.
It appears that our dead friend there was a philosopher of some kind. Makes sense, considering that we're near Alexandria. I wasn't paying much attention to that. Instead, I turned, hesitant, to read the words on the walls. My translator's lenses instantly changed them to English for me. I immediately wished that I hadn't read them.